Welcome, Feldman.
Blog Talk Radio.
That's your world. I just live in it.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, 911 is now unpublished. Just remember that. Hey, welcome to Feldman World Review. This is Brian Irving, your host here at the show. And welcoming you in. Chat room's open if you want to chat. Hopefully a bunch of people get in and talk. And I really appreciate everybody tuning in here tonight on Thursdays. I'll be getting back to the Sunday-Wednesday format starting Sunday. So make sure you're ready to tune in. And I could really use the support. So, you know, next time you listen to the show, bring your family, your friends, your cousins, even the people that disagree with you politically, bring them on to the show. What the hell, right? You know, every 2 years, you know, they say, oh, the election year, it's only a presidential election, but that's not true. Every single 2 years, the election years, the Democrats run out the same lying talking points. Right? We've heard them over and over again, you know, that the deplorables, that's us, you know, whether we're Republicans or conservatives or Trump supporters or at least be a lot of Reagan Democrats. I think there's going to be a lot of Trump Democrats this time around. But, you know, we want dirty water, dirty air, you know, we're all racist, we're all sexist, we're all xenophobic, we hate gay people. We don't care about minorities. We hate illegal aliens. You know, we're all in it for big business. We're all in it for the rich. And it goes on and on and on. I remember as a little kid years ago, it's a million years ago now, that you know, I was playing in the playground at school, and this kid was going around telling this joke, and the joke was, what do rich people flush down their toilet? And, you know, I was very, you know, unaware of a lot of things. But the answer was gold water. It was Barry Goldwater, you know, running against Johnson. They've used the same playbook forever. Attack. You know, it's not debate the issues. It's attack the individuals. You know, it's attack. And the left, the progressives today, you know, it seems real different this time around, this particular election year. You know, and if we go backwards, it's from defund the cops to burn down the mission, you know, to the coronavirus lockdown as in all these stretches, our constitutional rights are being destroyed. And there's a lot more fervor. A lot of people call it fear on the left that they're going to be losing power. A lot of people call it desperation. For the progressive National Socialist Democrats, you know, but it seems just it's different this year. It's difficult because, you know, in 2016, Trump supporters were being attacked mercilessly during the primaries, as many of us remember, mercilessly, like the unending violence. And then it kind of calmed down. And then I remember before that in 2014, you know, that's when Black Lives Matter was all about pigs in a blanket frying like bacon. You know, and there was a lot of violence then. But this intimidation now is different. Why? Because major corporations are kowtowing to these sick demands. Legal institutions, you know, city governments, state governments are defunding police. You know, they're going to... you know, come up with some alternative. I don't know what it's going to be. You know, maybe we go back to the Wild West. Everybody just carries their piece. Somebody tries to break that line of freedom, gets inside your space. You know, you'll have to deal with it that way. There won't be anybody to call. Actually, if it gets to that point, sometimes you have to react right away anyway. But do you feel safe, you know, Americans? And I'm not just talking about white people, you know. There are a lot of African-American conservatives that I give a lot of credit to. They stand up, they speak out, they're speaking out more than I've ever heard. You know, the threat's there across the board. But do you feel safe speaking out, speaking your mind right now? I mean, in many cases, in many places, I moved to Florida from New Jersey, a blue state, where you really had to mark your words, because the politics was always bubbling. And it has been, especially since the Obama administration came in. You know, the race politics has been bubbling till we've got what we have now. I mean, in public now, you have to think twice. You know, a friend of mine on Twitter got tickets to go to Oklahoma, go to the Trump rally in Oklahoma, because everybody's been waiting with bated breath. Everybody's been waiting, you know, to get back to these Trump rallies, because they, you know, I don't know about you guys, but they always would inspire me that he's going in the right direction, and he's looking out for us. He's looking out for the people that work, not the rich, not the pharmaceutical industry and the gas industry, because the Democrats always say they're against them, but they're always getting money from them. And they're always selling favors all the time. That's what they do. But, you know, she said that she didn't want to go. She said, I'm scared to go to the rally because this intimidation. See, the left, the progressive left, when it's unchecked, it's very intimidating. And right now we've had governors, we've had mayors, we've had our leaders in our country, state by state, not every state, but state by state, step back. We had them kneeling down with these threatening racists, kneeling down with them. There's the mass media of self-loathing that they're pushing all the time, that we should be ashamed. White people, we should all be ashamed. Conservatives should be ashamed. Anybody that supports America should be ashamed. Right? And instead we get the mass media of pop politics, because that's what it is now. This isn't real politics. This is pop politics. And all it is window dressing for a Marxist Islamist coalition that's trying to gain power, that's trying to gain inroads as best they can. Can you go out? You know, as a Jew, can you go out with your yarmulke on? If you don't know what a yarmulke is, it's a skull cap that Jews wear. Why? Because the yarmulke, because Jews are the number one hate crime the last 4 years is attacking Jews, beating up Jews. Whether it's in Canada, if you guys were on my sites today, one of my sites today, you saw the story that, you know, in Toronto, number one hate crime is attacking Jews in Toronto. What are they fighting over, the Maple Leafs versus the Ottawa Senators? I don't know. But the number one hate crime is against Jews. It's not against, you know, gay and transgender. There's no mobs of white guys with guns running around chasing Muslims around. You know, there's white people hunting down African-American people. It's not happening. But you go out with your yarmulke, you can get battered over the head just because you're wearing it. You had the nerve. You had the nerve. It was like when Ariel Sharon in 1998, he walked up to Temple Mount, and the Palestinians were just, oh my God, he had the nerve. Those Jewish feet touched the ground. Like it's the end of the world. The race hate's unbelievable on that side. We're not those races. You put your MAGA hat on. We've watched the stories. I mean, it was all the stories from the rallies where people were physically attacked and intimidated and threatened, and they had their cars keyed and all kinds of crap happen. But, you know, you can't just walk around with your MAGA hat. We saw videos of kids walking in with a MAGA hat onto a Burger King and being spit on, having their food dumped on top of them. The stories of men walking down the street and guys screeching over and beating them with a bat because they had a hat on. You know, you're less likely to throw on your Trump 2020 T-shirt when you walk outside. Because it's not just a matter of, you know, free speech. It's a matter of that these people are doing a very good job emulating Nazi youth, emulating the Waffen, going out, smashing up things. You know, Kristallnacht in Germany, you know, they broke all the glass and burnt all of the businesses of the Jews. Well, that's what New York looked like, Minneapolis looked like. many cities across the United States have looked like lately. You know, but we're not the racists. But so many of us are intimidated. We have a reason to be intimidated. There's a reason to be intimidated. And we all want to stand up and say, well, we can just stand up to it. But, you know, the thing is, we have to really pick our spots to fight right at the moment. But we have to fight. We have to speak out. You know, everybody goes, well, you know, I'm going to fight this war at a different, there's a different place to throw down. But no, you know, our courts are turning against us. The Supreme Court just did a ruling on DACA today that just blew my mind. You know, here is an unconstitutional, illegal edict, okay, from Mr. Hussein. And everybody agrees. And then John Roberts, one of George Bush's failures, he says there's not enough in the argument. You know, he did this when he had to review Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act in the first place. He should have said it was, you know, he goes, oh, well, it's not a fee, it's a tax. And he threw it back to the Congress, who was inept. We needed the Supreme Court to slam the door, to use the Constitution like they're supposed to and slam the door. You know? The police have become political. Police are quitting. Police are being killed. Police are being attacked. They've been vilified. Right? Religion is now political. All political. If you're religious, you can't work a job in a normal business. You can't. If you speak your mind as a Catholic, as a Jew, you know, suddenly you're just heathen. You're just this evil human being. And it's a lie, but it's intimidating. We're intimidating right now. Because we face that threat. And who's standing up? Where's the leadership in the Republican Party? There isn't any. Mitch McConnell pops up every once in a while with some easy comments about some easy thing to discuss. You know, these guys got to go. They got to put term limits in here so people can speak their mind. They do their 4 years or their 6 years or their 8 years, and they're gone. And somebody else comes in. You know, these people that have been in Congress and the Senate for 40, 50 years, that's ridiculous. It shouldn't be a career choice. It never should be. But they're not fighting for us. The media, we already know where the media is at. It's incredible. You know, you have to go to the Internet. The only reason why I do this is because you need citizen journalists that are looking at other things, that are talking about stories that aren't coming up on there. Now, as Trump's presidency proceeded all this time, we saw more and more of the exposure of the deep state plants in the government. We also saw the left-wing activist media clearer and clearer, more and more. A media for one party. It's like where I came from in New Jersey, the town I lived in. When you went to vote for local elections, there was only one party. It was usually two Democrats running against. They eliminated the Republicans completely from the county I lived in, basically. Just eliminated. That's what they want to do. That's what they're trying to do. But what we have now is much more violent. It's much more out of control. It's much more racist than I've ever seen. And I'm not talking about white supremacy, Mr. ADL. That guy, all he ever puts out is that, oh, white supremacy is a threat, or white supremacists are a threat to all these different people. But the crimes are against other people. You know. But that was an Obama appointee, the schmuck at the Anti-Defamation League. It's ridiculous. You know? The corrupt foreign policy was exposed during the Trump administration so far, right? So he's exposed the deep state. He's exposed in the media. He's exposing the ridiculous corrupt foreign policy that was making certain people in Congress and in the Senate and the House rich. And we know who they are. There's many of them. Some of them were Republicans. Some of the Republicans that ran away in 2018 when we didn't succeed in keeping the House, which we've got to get back this time. You know, it's just going on and on. And all these things that we see changing, this stuff with the left, businesses from Amazon to Google to fashion houses to theaters to all these companies. They're putting all this support out there for Black Lives Matter. They don't even know who Black Lives Matter really is, because they're not just about Black Lives Matter. They're about transgender lives. They're about Marxist lives. They're about Palestinian and terror lives. It gets clearer and clearer. And thanks to Trump, they're all coming out all over the place. The problem is, between the media and their very effective, violent ground game and threatening ground game now, that's culminated in these weeks and weeks of riots and shootings and burnings and vitriol and hate. You know, Obama must be proud. I mean, he's sticking his face out there now because he's got to be proud because he started this. But man, those 3.5 years, we were rolling along, right? We were feeling really good, supporters of the Trump administration and his intent, you know, and his intent. We were rolling. The economy was up. Unemployment was down. And I hate that we don't just talk about Americans that are working and not working, but we break them down into white and yellow and red and this and women and that and all these different groups of people. You know, it should be just total unemployment. Everybody was benefiting, but it's true. Record low not only in the Black community, but in youth, the African American youth unemployment was as low as it's ever been. And then first the coronavirus rolled in with puppets from Bill Gates, the puppeteer, coming in and convincing. Intimidating the entire country, intimidating the President of the United States, intimidating the NFL, the Major League Baseball, all these intimidating major corporations had to shut down. To our detriment, to our absolute detriment, we still have this high unemployment. And the fight goes on with these idiots. If we had not lost the House in 2018, folks, I just want you to remember, we would not be here right now. After that loss, I could barely talk. I went off the air for months. Even though this is my therapy and it built up, and now I'm crazier than ever. But after we have to get the House back. We have got to stop this progressive train. We've got to be ready to speak our minds, stand in line to vote, and maybe counter-protest. Maybe some of these counter-protests. I really enjoyed that story about Atifa said they were going to have some rally out in some city in California, and the Hell's Angels said they were going to be there, and then they canceled it. And I'm not saying that we need the Hell's Angels to go out there. I mean, the Rolling Stones hired them in Altamont, and you saw what happened there. Somebody got murdered. Somebody got shot. You know, you don't want just total lawlessness, but we need to be ready. You know, we need to be absolutely ready. But the coronavirus came, and then there was this mess, this racialism, this hate, this race hate. You know, and they say, well, they can't be racists, right? You know, so, well, yeah, well, they can't be racist. What do you mean they can't be racist? Because this isn't about this total victimization. You know what the left is doing right now? The left is rallying against burning buildings down and destroying property and defacing property and defacing statues and monuments. And they're calling for the defunding of the police, and they're calling for the end of the Trump administration. And what are they really voting and fighting for? They're fighting for a guy. Their enemy that they see, he doesn't exist. Okay, the institutionalized racism that they're attacking today doesn't exist the way they're saying it does. That this is some kind of a genocide. Well, the Jews have been through a genocide. The Armenians have been through a genocide. You know, just in recent history, there's genocide going on right now. If you're a Coptic Christian, if you're a Yazidi, okay, if you're an Assyrian, they're trying to erase these people off the planet. They tried to do it to the Jews in the area. They drove the Jews all out of those countries up into 1948, and there was none in Iraq and Iran. And, you know, the Jews got driven out. They're claiming there's a genocide in America. It's not there. It's not there. So they're fighting these straw dogs. They're fighting a man that doesn't exist the way they define him. They're going after a culture and a population that doesn't exist the way they're defining that population. And they're saying that the biggest issue to the African-American community is this hate. But Drew got a Freedy, who writes for Gatestone Institute, had an article, and it really caught my eye, because the title is All We Are, Is All We Are the Color of Our Skin? And he made some points here. He said, we should not allow ourselves to fall into the crude trap of this debilitating racialization. Because that's another thing that's intimidating. He also said that the first problem is collective responsibility, the idea that responsibility for the crimes of a few extends to all members of a group, both criminals and victims. Well, as Larry Elder, an American radio host, he's an author, he's an attorney, he recently wrote, reparations are the extraction of money from those who were never slave owners to be given to those who were never slaves. He also points out that the second problem is responsibility through the generations. The idea that the passage of time does not change anything. Children who are not yet born are, in advance, responsible for the crimes and abuses of their ancestors and all the ancestors of the group to which they belong. And he said that reducing human beings to their skin color marks the supreme defeat in humanistic and political thought. Ayn Rand called it this collectivism, the lowest mentality. Now, the political left in the United States now seems to embrace the most openly racist ideas since the German National Socialism of the 30s and 40s. Their racist view, their racist view according to Gottfried Freedy, according to which the color of skin is the measure of all reality, truth, hierarchy, and moral values. It makes a startling regression. During recent riots, shop fronts, synagogues in the United States were defaced with anti-Semitic slogans. It is argued in vain that these threats should not be exaggerated. A protester in New York City seemed comfortable openly declaring on Fox News that he intended to lead his peers, laden with cheap gasoline, to go set fire to a neighborhood, the Diamond District, where many Jews are known to work. The doctrine that reduces human beings to the color of their skin does not befit any society, especially a multiracial one. One of the demands of many of the left is to pay trillions of dollars for reparations. When you love, you do not count. To the descendants of slaves, which wouldn't have been Obama because he's not a descendant of a slave. He was half Kenyan socialist and half Hawaiian communist. But this demand creates three problems. The first problem is collective responsibility, the idea that responsibility for the crimes of a few extends to all members of the group. Second problem is responsibility for the generations, the idea that the passage of time does not change anything. The children are responsible that aren't even born yet for the crimes and abusing of their ancestors. That collective responsibility, historical responsibility, are the two theoretical and moral matrices of anti-Semitism throughout the ages. They killed Jesus. The third problem of race, more precisely of skin color, from the perspective of many, especially in today's political left, a person is defined first and foremost by his skin. He belongs in some way to that color of his skin. And everything else is of less importance. A white person can be considered a criminal by the color of their skin, just as Jews were considered criminals by the simple fact of their Jewishness. And it just continues to run that way. It just runs that way. But finally, self-identifying the descendants of slaves involves an exhaustive geological and genetic mapping, but none of that really matters. Reducing human beings to their skin color marks the biggest human defeat. How far we've come as a country. You know, I wasn't raised as a racist. I was raised to accept people for who they are, to not judge people by how they look at all. The children my wife and I raised, the majority of their heroes, the people they looked up to, were not white. Which brings me to Black Lives Matter, this movement and as Dr. Craig Ruther called it, an existential threat to America. Its sudden rise in metastasizing power puts America in a dangerous crossroads. And he writes, Black Lives Matter has taken America by storm. Simply put, it is a radical leftist outfit that seeks to replace capitalism with socialism, abolish the police and let criminals out of jail, and look to socialist Venezuela as a model. Historically, Black Lives Matter's ascendance reached back to the Black Panthers of the 60s. In recent years, it has drawn inspiration from radical Occupy Wall Street movement. That was the Black Bloc, Antifa, because they've come together and they've had a big impact on each other. Now, the BLM movement was given added impetus by the killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. The left mobilized upon Brown's tragic death in 2014. BLM and other radical groups promoting the false narrative of hands up, don't shoot. Supposedly the young man's final words before he was, we were told, brutally gunned down by a racist white cop. Destructive and deadly riots ensued. Of course, hands up, don't shoot was one big lie. Every black witness who testified before the grand jury stated that Michael Brown had attempted to force his way into the officer's police cruiser, assaulted the officer, tried to grab his weapon, looked at objectively. Mr. Brown was a thug who sadly paid with his life for the terrible choices he made. Even the Obama Justice Department could not come to a different conclusion. Yet due to his death at the hands of this white police officer, as well as two or three similar events in recent years, the monstrous lie took hold that white police officers were engaged in genocide against black men. This dangerous falsehood, so assiduously promoted by many in the media and by legions of the progressive professors on our college campuses, where sadly the mostly white student bodies lapped up every word. Yes, they thought, America is irredeemably racist. And there was nothing we could do to remove the stain of bigotry from our white skin except to bow down before the new racial conformity. So today, young whites fall to their knees to repudiate their white privilege and beg for forgiveness that will never be forthcoming. And why not? Because the new racial overlords lecture us racism is not simply inherent in white Americans' shameful past. It still permeates our white skin, and we can do nothing about it. It is who we are. White folks can even debase themselves by washing the feet of black men, as has occurred a lot recently, these different separate incidents. Yet the original stain of white racism can never be symbolically washed away. Of course, the protests and riots the past 2 weeks were triggered by the tragic death of George Floyd. He certainly did not deserve to die, and those responsible should be punished to the fullest extent of the law. However, it's troubling that this man has been transformed into a tragic hero of the left. This man with a long rap sheet who once stuck a pistol in the stomach of a pregnant woman who wasn't black during a home invasion robbery. Yet Floyd's ultimately demise is ruthlessly exploited by Black Lives Matter, and yet another example of the fact that black men are being murdered wholesale by racist police officers. Might there be at least a scintilla? Well, you know how the question goes. It goes, how many unarmed African Americans were shot and killed by the police last year? 90,000? 900? 9? Well, if you selected 9, you'd be correct. You know, with 14 million encounters with law enforcement, 9 unarmed blacks were killed. And there were a lot of different reasons. Half of them, the police lost their job. And I don't have to go on. We've all seen the statistics. But you know, it's gotten to that point now where, it's just totally out of control, this whole situation. And it's done with hate. Now, the other thing about the Black Lives Matter, especially along with Antifa, because you know how they were saying, oh, there's white supremacists out here, there's racists, there's Klan on these rallies. Well, they have made some kind of peace together. And Ariel Natan Pasco did a lot of research for the Jewish press about the Black Lives Matter and black Nazis. And they're evil, just like the white Nazis. And Ariel wrote, I'm not colorblind. I don't look at the color of someone's skin, but the content of their character, including their speech and actions. And let me tell you, black Jew-hating Nazis are just as bad as white Jew-hating Nazis. It started with Reverend Louis Farrakhan calling Judaism a gutter religion, and Reverend Jeremiah Wright describing Israel as a state terrorism against Palestinians. Or did it? No, actually, starting in 1961, the Nation of Islam, under Elijah Muhammad's leadership and with Malcolm X's help, the NOI developed ties to the Ku Klux Klan and the American Nazi Party. The policy continued under Farrakhan's leadership of the Nation of Islam. That's, Keith X up there, the AG in Minnesota. He's one of his disciples. Now, Farrakhan's past statements are well known. For example, here are the Jews don't like Farrakhan, and so they call me Hitler. Well, that's a good name. Hitler was a very great man. He wasn't great for me as a black man, but he was a great German. Now, for a while in the 60s, the Black Panthers insisted they were not against Jews, but only against Zionism. Until 1970, when Connie Matthews, international coordinator for the Black Panther Party, declared that the BPP official organ, the Jewishness, Zionism, and racism were identical. She claimed that most Jews involved in the left were Zionists. She accused the Jews involved in the Chicago 8 conspiracy trial to have been willing and did sacrifice Bobby Seale, a Black Panther, and his role in the conspiracy to gain publicity. Later, she declared, the one-eyed bandit from Tel Aviv, that was Moshe Dayan, must be hunted down and killed. In fact, threatened attacks by black radicals on synagogues and the daily attacks on Jews in the streets of New York, similar to today, is what gave rise to Rabbi Meir Kahane's Jewish Defense League in 1968. Now, lest you think that they're just isolated radical black preachers and militants, think again. Think about how modern black pop culture is inundated with Jew hatred. Rap and hip-hop singers have expressed anti-Semitic views since the beginning of the genre. Following of Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam, Professor Griff, former member of the hip-hop group Public Enemy, then serving as the Minister of Information, said in 1989 that Jews are responsible for the majority of the wickedness in the world. That's right. We Jews, we bring the majority of it. In 1990, Public Enemy issued the single Welcome to the Terror Dome, which contains the lyrics Crucifixion Ain't No Fiction, So-Called Chosen Frozen, Apologies Made to Whoever Pleases, Still They Got Me Like Jesus, belittling the chosenness concept in Judaism and reinforcing the Christian accusation of decided by the Jews. Even during these tense and riotous times in America recently, following George Floyd's death by a policeman, with many liberal Jews marching along, and they really annoy me, I got to say, some are still stoking the flames, as with Ice Cube's recent behavior. You know, he tweeted out that the Star of David, with apparent occult reference, when called out on his anti-Semitism, he said, "What if I was just pro-black? This is the truth, brother. I didn't lie to anyone. I didn't say I was anti-anybody." Yet he has a long history of Jew hatred. Ice Cube responds to, accusations and so on. It just has gone on. Nicki Minaj is accused of using Nazi symbolism. And, back Janet Jackson did a video where they were all dressed in military. They looked like it. But, as late as 2006, Andrew Young, in an interview with the Los Angeles Sentinel, when asked about Walmart hurting independent businesses, replied, "You see, those are the people who have been overcharging us, and they sold us out and moved to Florida. I think they ripped off our communities enough. First, it was the Jews." Now, during the Crown Heights riots in 91, when blacks attacked Jews, Yanker Rosenblum was stabbed to death. It was old Al Sharpton got involved in that one. No, he did. But if you want a modern-day version, a current version of this Marxist-Islamist coalition's attitude and their brotherhood together, and especially when you mix in some of the Nazis and some of the rest of them, they're all fighting together. There was this imam this Philadelphia Muslim leader, you know, he said defund the police. He calls for more bloodshed. And as reported in PJ Media, it says that there is considerable evidence of leftist Islamic collaboration in the recent riots, and one Islamic scholar has called openly for more bloodshed. This should be, but probably won't be, a matter of concern for intelligence and law enforcement officials, because this imam is not in Tehran or Lahore or Kabul. He's in Philly. Now, the Middle East Media Research Institute, MEMRI, reports that on June 2nd, an Islamic scholar in the city of brotherly love, Nafis Abu Zaid Sparrow, uploaded a video to the Maktaban Evening Tamiyah YouTube channel in which he dismisses peaceful protests on Islamic grounds. He says, quote, "Even scholars of the past, they mentioned clearly that there is nothing found, no basis whatsoever in the Quran or in the Sunnah for demonstrations or protests." Sparrow mocked the Twitter wars and meme-making that characterize our current silly civil war. He said, quote, "When Allah told Moses to go back to deal with the tyrannical ruler, to deal with this tyrannical system, did he tell him to spit in their faces? Did he tell them to stand outside and do public demonstrations? Did he tell them to behave a certain way, to clown the president, make up all kinds of memes, say this about the president because it's the way you feel? Did he say to do all of that and talk bad about the Pharaoh? So all this tweeting, speaking, celebrities, don't follow them. F Trump. What to do instead? Wage violent jihad." He said, quote, "To get freedom, brothers, it takes fighting. And I'm sorry, unless you have got divine interventions, Moses didn't need an army to fight. But go to Muhammad. Didn't Muhammad have to fight? Go to all the prophets before. Get your verses. Get your verses ready. Get your verses ready. You got to get the verses ready." It's incredible. And now this is a philosophy that our businesses, our government, our leadership is lining up behind, as if they're a political party, which they are not. And we all saw the Democrats, especially Nancy Pelosi, couldn't get back up when they all knelt down with these kente cloths on them. Well, a story came out today, and I'm reading it from USA Today because I don't want you to think I'm just making it up myself. But they fact-checked it, and it turns out that these clothes that were worn were from an empire involved in the West African slave trade. And a Devon Link wrote this article, and he goes, "The claim kente scarves worn by Democrats were historically worn by rich African slave owners and traders. On June 8th, Democrat members of Congress wearing kente cloth and face masks knelt in Emancipation Hall to memorialize black lives lost to police brutality. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat, California, read the names of unarmed black people who'd recently been killed by police. We were there for 8 minutes and 46 seconds on our knees," she told reporters afterward. "My members will attest, it's a very long time. It's a very long time." The group then introduced the Justice in Policing Act of 2020, aimed at changing policing after a series of black individuals killed by police officers led to weeks of protests in the U.S. and overseas. Now, in the days since, social media users have pointed out that they cross historical ties to the slave trade. And yesterday, Democrats wore kente scarves down. So check this out. The kente cloth was worn by the Ashanti. It's made of silk, so the affluent wore it. Now, the Ashanti were also known as slave owners and traders, huh? You know, in the Facebook post, Brandon alleges that the kente cloth historical ties to the slave trade, however, he ignores the broader cultural significance the cloth has to West African and African-American culture. You know, but anyway, the Ashanti and slave trade, I'm just going to run some history here. Tutu, who lived from 1660 to 1712 or 1717, unified several small Ashanti kingdoms to create the Ashanti Empire. He is credited with expanding the Ashanti throughout most of Ghana and introducing his subjects to the gold and slave trades along the West African coast. The Ashanti supplied British and Danish traders with slaves in exchange for firearms, which they used to expand their empire. Slaves were often acquired as tributes from smaller states captured during war. Some slaves were brought across the Atlantic, while others stayed in Africa to work in the gold fields like they do today. Now, according to the BBC, by the end of the 18th century, the region exported an estimated 6,000 to 7,000 slaves per year. Now, the Ultimate History Project has pointed out to the pangi cloth woven by the Maroon people of Suriname as evidence of Kente's cultural significance beyond slave traders. Now, Suriname, formerly Dutch Guiana, is a small nation on the northeast coast of South America. It gained its independence from the Netherlands in 1975. Suriname's Maroon people are the descendants of escaped African slaves. But, you know, I mean, they just don't know what they're doing. They don't understand it. And, you know, and as far as this Marxist-Islamist coalition goes, we already know that we have radical Muslims in the Congress right now, you know, Rashida Tlaib being one, Ilhan Omar is another, and there are many more. But now there's a Muslim that's running for Congress, Solomon Rajput. He's a 27-year-old Muslim man running for Congress in Michigan, and he's challenging U.S. Representative Debbie Dingell in the 12th Congressional District in 2020. And he, you know, he keeps saying, "We're done waiting. It's our turn." Well, what the hell does that mean? I mean, these people that, you know, they're trying to turn our Congress and our government into these different factions. And that's not what this is supposed to be about. The reason why we have two parties, you know, we don't have all these different factions fighting each other, and especially ones that are bent on hate and racism and base their whole philosophy on racism. You know, it's incredible. But the impact, it is intimidating. It's been intimidating because its impact, it's impacting how the Supreme Court's making decisions. It's impacting how businesses are willing to fire or not fire people, or hire and not hire people. It's stretched out, you know. So it's hard to feel safe. It's hard to feel safe expressing yourself. But we've got to keep fighting. We have to keep the faith. Now, we all saw the story of Atlanta because, of course, you know, the local black people didn't burn down the Wendy's, by the way. I've seen video that there's a, it looks like two white or Arabic or Latino women that were working on burning this thing down. Hopefully they catch these people. But, you know, this narrative keeps going. And this DA, Paul Howard, the district attorney, he overcharged. He said that they didn't offer him due process. They didn't tell him he was being arrested. He didn't do CPR. They didn't call for help. And all the video, all the body cam footage, which is now coming together, it contradicts this DA altogether. Now, I'm sure they'd love these cops to get off so they could have another reason to riot. But the fact of the matter is, you have to have an investigation first. This DA got way out in front of it for political reasons, for politics, because he's up for election this year, right? So Eric Blair of Gateway Pundit wrote that, in a high-profile press conference carried live by all news networks on Wednesday, Fulton County District Attorney Paul Howard claimed police officer Garrett Rolfe did not administer CPR after shooting Rashard Brooks, who had wrestled the taser away from him before trying to flee. Now, Rolfe's body camera came off his uniform after Brooks wrestled and punched him, so he got punched a few times, but it continued working. While there was no video of the aftermath of the shooting in the Wendy's parking lot, the audio continued to roll. Rolfe immediately began administering cardiopulmonary resuscitation and could clearly be heard pleading, "Mr. Brooks, keep breathing for me." Now, the jerky body cam footage captures him kneeling on the ground and administering CPR to the bleeding man. Now, Rolfe administered CPR until the ambulance arrived and can be heard repeatedly calling Mr. Brooks' name as he tried to keep him alive. And that was reported from the Daily Mail. And Howard said that his press conference had followed the shooting, the officer failed to give him any medical attention. Lance Russo, Rolfe's lawyer, said in a statement, "Suddenly, without warning or provocation, Mr. Brooks chose to violently attack two uniformed police officers. Officer Bronson and Rolfe used the least amount of force possible in their attempts to place Mr. Brooks in handcuffs. They attempted to leverage him to the ground while giving him loud, clear verbal commands. In response, Mr. Brooks continued actively resisting lawful efforts to arrest him. He then escalated his resistance by punching Officer Ralph in the face, committing several counts of felony obstruction of an officer. In an effort to place Mr. Brooks under arrest and stop his assault, Officer Ralph lawfully deployed his taser twice, but it had no effect on Mr. Brooks. Mr. Brooks continued his assault and disarmed Officer Brosnan, stealing his city-issued taser, committing a robbery, another forcible felony under Georgia law. Mr. Brooks then armed, began running through a crowded parking lot. Mr. Brooks was lawfully under arrest, and Officer Ralph pursued him. Officer Ralph had deployed his taser and held it steady in hopes that the prongs would catch onto Mr. Brooks' body and neutralize him. Unfortunately, that didn't occur. Instead of merely trying to escape, Mr. Brooks reached back with his arm extended and pointed an object at Officer Ralph. Officer Ralph heard a sound like a gunshot, saw a flash. Fearing for his safety, he pulled the trigger. But the issue here is they've created, that's what I'm saying. They're rioting, they're burning down buildings, and they're committing thefts against people that don't exist. There is no institutionalized racism. There was 9 shot in 2019, and half of them were justified per grand jury, per an investigation. I mean, that's what we had. Now, Rashard Brooks was apparently, this guy, he was on probation. He had a reason to run that had nothing to do with white supremacy, had nothing to do with white privilege, had nothing to do with racism, had nothing to do with fear of the cops. He was on probation for 4 crimes, including cruelty to children. And he faced going back to prison if charged with a DUI when he was found asleep and intoxicated at a Wendy's drive-thru, but not just in the parking lot. He was apparently in the drive-thru lane. Rashard Brooks was on probation and faced going back to prison if he was charged with a DUI. But you see the violence this lie has stirred up, the hate it has stirred up, the racism it has stirred up, and people are being hurt. And it's frightening. It reminds me back in the 68, 69, 70, 72, that area. There were fights constantly, race fights. There was race wars going on in high schools, in junior high schools. There was the whole busing thing going on. There was all this fighting going on. We got to a point where I thought we had already worked past this, and now we're back here. We're back here in the same situation that we've been in a long time ago. And the other cop, Devin Bronson, he suffered a concussion during this altercation. The other cop, he actually had a concussion from getting pounded by this guy. That guy was strong. Should have been playing football or doing something else. But we vilified our police. The police have had it. They're not getting any support. Mayors aren't standing up for them. City councils aren't standing up for them. The media is not standing up for them. Even though the facts fly in the face of these accusations over and over again. And now, Christine Lally is reporting on Gateway that the NYPD cops may strike on the 4th of July to let the city have Independence Day without cops. You know, they're kicking around these plans to do it. New York's finest are fed up with the anti-police movement taking the country by storm following the death of George Floyd. The Democrat Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio fanned the flames and attacked their own police department as George Floyd rioters beat the NYPD cops and ran over officers. And officers were shot. Officers have been killed during this time, just like they were in 2014. Now, the cops are fed up. So the New York Post reported, a pair of flyers making their rounds among NYPD officers are encouraging them to call out sick July 4th, a retribution for police reform and a perceived anti-cop climate following the outrage over high-profile police killings of unarmed black men across the country, multiple cops told the Post. One message calls for a strike to kick off at 3 p.m. July 4th. Quote, NYPD cops will strike on July 4th to let the city have their independence without cops, the message, which is being passed among cops via text, said. Now, cops that say we can't strike because of the Taylor law, the message reads referencing a law that makes public worker stoppages punishable with fines and jail time. The people and this city doesn't honor us. Why honor them? A blue flu began rapidly spreading this week after the crooked Fulton DA filed murder charges against Officer Garrett Rolfe in the death of Rashard Brooks. Atlanta police officers report he called out on their shift. So we're facing a serious problem here with the police officers. You know, they've had it. And you really can't blame them. I mean, they see the worst. They see the worst of people every single day, constantly. You know, absolutely constantly. You know. And, you know, it's just incredible. And how about this? How about this community chop? Like, I really like what Tucker Carlson did with it, you know, kind of the country NGOs are bailing them out with food. But it turns out the CHOP pushed back after Seattle inked an agreement with the organizers to shrink the protest. And it was reported on the Daily Wire that Seattle has reached a deal with the organizers of the Capitol Hill occupied protest. I like Chaz better, or CHOP. To reduce the size of the demonstration by half and erect permanent concrete borders. But not everyone is happy with the city's decision or the city's continued tolerance of the CHOP zone. Quote, the Seattle Department of Transportation is installing concrete barriers in the middle of Pine Street running east and west, which will split the road for both pedestrians and vehicle traffic. This will allow for emergency vehicles to pass through the area, Fox News reported Wednesday. The agreement also seems to make CHOP a more permanent fixture. The network added that it has confirmed the agreement to replace the wooden barrier with a... I mean, what are they going to let these guys move in here? And the leader, you know, all this leader who's become famous, Raz, the warlord? Well, there's a lot of weird things going on here. And our buddy Jim Hop, Joe Hop, said that he's gun runner. And he played a lead role in a porno movie, a rape movie, you know, a black-on-white rape movie. Now, the Black Lives Matter warlord, gun-running leader of Chaz is connected to the Dubai government. How about that? And, you know, it's amazing how the connections come out after the fact, right? And he owns 3 luxury automobiles, and he has millions in property. Raz also performed the lead role in a production. Now, Gateway reported yesterday that the mysterious Raz is the new warlord and gunrunner in Chaz. We also know that he is connected to Dubai government and appears to maintain a lavish lifestyle. He also has a studio in Seattle where he no doubt produced his films. What we can further report is that Raz was the lead in a movie, okay, and in the production Raz stars in, we find aggravated sexual assault, gang rape, and murder as the key components of this work of progressive art. In the movie, Raz is in the lead role, the lead gangster. You know, he meets a young girl, and the rest is history. This is really getting, you know, ridiculous. But as I get more information about his connection with the Dubai government, I'll let you guys know. Because obviously, I mean, I never heard of this guy. Maybe he's a big star somewhere. But, I mean, if he owns 3 expensive cars, he's got millions of dollars in property, and he's now the king of CHOP or Chaz, whatever you prefer. Got to find out more about it. But, you know, you'd think the media would do some of this homework, you know, instead of leaving it for the rest of us to try to cobble together or get these stories from other people that we know, you know. But I just want to say real quick, I only got about 5 minutes left in the show. I appreciate anybody that's been tuning in. And remember, if you can't listen to us live, the podcast is always there, same link. But we should never comply with another pandemic lockdown order. Never again. That just shouldn't happen. Because, you know, the hypocrisy in all of this really knows no bounds. I mean, it's been insane. And, you know, as John Daniel Davidson noted in The Federalist, that, you know, this hypocrisy is playing out all over the country. Mayors who did nothing to prevent mass protests in recent weeks, and in some cases joined protesters in violation of their own lockdown orders, have maintained draconian restrictions on other types of gatherings, you know, strictly limiting the number of people who can congregate in restaurants. And they went after my Jewish brothers up there in Brooklyn really bad. That, you know, that's another anti-Semite, de Blasio. But Davidson writes, the starkest contradiction of all might be the reactions to President Trump's rally planned for Saturday in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Local health officials are warning it could become a disastrous super spreader event. In turn, media outlets like the New York Times have been eager to repeat headlines warning Trump rally in Tulsa could spread virus. using language they would never use to describe any of the large-scale protests, rallies, and riots nationwide. Now, some media pundits make no apologies for this obvious double standard. Tuesday on The View, Joy Behar, that moron, claimed Trump doesn't care about his supporters' health and safety. So, you know, we never should do this again. We never should let this threat. I mean, there was never a death clock when the flu came through and killed 70, 80, 90,000 people every year and a half a million across the globe. You know, you had to build herd immunity. If these viruses come through and you get them, it's just sort of bad luck in a sense. But, you know, when we talk about corruption, one people that's really been fighting it is Judicial Watch. And they had a story where U.S. Medical Research Agency fires dozens of scientists with financial charge, connections to China. Of course, you don't hear this on the mainstream media. And it says here, dozens of scientists at the National Institute of Health. Wait a minute, isn't that Fauci's? Isn't that Dr. Fauci's group? Anyway, the U.S. government handsomely funded medical research agency. They've been fired over their secret financial ties to communist China. It's not clear how long they went undetected or how many taxpayer-funded research they stole. But so far, 54 scientists have been booted for failing to disclose a troubling financial arrangement with a foreign government. In the overwhelming majority of cases, 93%, the cash came from China. Now, according to an ongoing NIH investigation that started 2 years ago, also in most of the probes, the targets were Asian men in their 50s. The bulk of the ousted researchers received generous grants from the NIH, a federal agency, with a $41.6 billion annual budget. That's a lot of dough. Now, the probe launched in the summer of 2018 and is being conducted by Michael S. Lauer, Deputy Director of Extramural Research at NIH. It mainly focuses on 285 active grants distributed to institutions in 27 states. But that's a lot of people, 54 scientists under Fauci's watch was making money from China. And this is the same China who we find has been developing weapons to fry the American power grid like Pearl Harbor. But I think I have a caller. I'm sorry to keep you on, waiting. Caller, you've got exactly 60 seconds to tell me what you want to say.
You're talking to me?
I think so. Hello? Your area code 508?
Yes. Hi. Oh, I'm on. Hello. How are you? I was listening.
You're on.
How
good.
You doing?
How are you?
Yeah.
Give me a quick shot. I got about 1 minute left.
All right. You might as well just bow down to the communist overlords. The country is pretty much done. I don't see this turning out well. I pretty much don't know what to say. We can't defend ourselves. We can't defend ourselves online. If we try to form any type of counter protest, we're arrested. You know,
right.
What do the optics say to you would be a good question. I need to ask you, because what I'm seeing from the optics, they're telling me, screw me as an American. You know, it's just like I've been getting screwed as an American for the past 15 years anyways. But now it's just in my face. I mean, what do you have to say about it? I've lost all hope for my country.
I think that the movement. Well, I just got to do this fast. I'm sorry about that. I wish I had seen your call sooner. You know, I think this is a minority. I think this is maybe you could say 30% might be involved deeply in this. The fact that the businesses are kowtowing and the media is all bent around this is definitely disturbing. We need to keep the faith because the American system can work. I think it really shows how important it is that we go out and vote, and that our candidates
don't have to vote out
the progressives.
The only thing we can do is arm ourselves, defend ourselves, and try
to make it into that election. We can't wait for November 3rd for this to all get better.
Is this country going to be around by November 3rd? Because the left's pretty much telling us they're going to destroy the country if they lose elections.
You got to go,
that's
brother.
What I've got.
It better be. Thanks for the call. You've been listening
Blake,
to Tell
Me
World
Report. After the show?
And listen, folks, don't you guys worry, man. You keep the faith. Yeah, when the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith. And we just got to keep that going. Vote November.
That's your world. I just live in it.
The The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, I want to thank you for listening to the June 18th podcast of Film and World Review. This is Brian Irving, your host here at Film and World Review. Thank you for tuning in. And remember, normally we're on Sundays, 10 p.m., Wednesdays, 10 p.m., but then I also do shows on other days, depending on what's happening. And so look for those, look for the posts on Facebook, on Twitter, on Parler, on Instagram. And just remember, we're in tough times. These are really tough times. It's like the caller that just called in. It's hard to see how we get out of this, okay? But there's a lot of psyops going on. I think the problem is not as big as it appears to be because you have so many people focusing on it. I think we need to make sure we're ready to defend ourselves. We need to speak our minds. We have to have faith, and we have to try to be strong. And, you know, this is as close to national socialism as this country's ever gotten. And I just think that there'll be a majority awakening in this country, and I think that people are going to be ready to put this to an end, this insane, anti-constitutional, anti-capitalist, anti-American, anti-culture movement that's going on. I think I see a lot of African-Americans are waking up and speaking out. I see a lot of Latino people waking up and speaking out. I see a lot of Democrats getting ready to get out of their party, because who wants to be hanging out with the Marxist-Islamist coalition? Not me. There's no good's going to come from it. Socialism doesn't work, and America can just continue to get better. So thank you. And remember, when the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith.